The alleged ringleader behind the bombing of a suburban Twin Cities mosque last summer appeared in an Urbana, Illinois federal courtroom today. 47-year-old Michael Harry and his two alleged accomplices pleaded not guilty to firearms charges in a related case. Harry's past includes a child kidnapping conviction for taking his daughters to Central America, as well as allegations that he threatened his neighbor at gunpoint. Investigators say Harry and his two alleged accomplices, 22-year-old Joe Morris and 29-year-old Michael McWhorter, piled into a rented black four-door Nissan pickup truck, drove 8 hours from eastern Illinois to Bloomington, Minnesota, smashed a window on the Darul Farooq Islamic Center, and tossed in a pipe bomb. An hour before sunrise on August 5th, their device exploded. Later that day, center director Muhammad Omar told reporters that one of the five people gathered for early prayers that day ran outside immediately.
One of our congregations saw a pickup truck leaving from the parking lot in a very unusual, speed. And the guy was standing exactly where the window was broken.
The blast heavily damaged the imam's office, but no one was injured. According to the criminal complaint, Morris broke the window with a sledgehammer before McWhorter lit the fuse. All three men are from Clarence, Illinois, a community of a few dozen homes about 120 miles south of Chicago. Acting on an anonymous emailed tip about a stash of bombs, federal agents swept into town February 19th. But their first stop was not at Harry's property. It was the home of his neighbor, John O'Neill. On a windy afternoon in March, O'Neill opens the door of his backyard shed and points to the spot where a month prior, investigators used a robot to uncover a stash of explosives, including a pipe bomb attached to a small green propane tank.
That's the robot tracks that they showed on the news.
O'Neill says federal investigators never suspected him of putting the bombs in his shed. According to court documents, Harry and his two alleged accomplices planted them there, and Harry was the person who tipped off the ATF. O'Neill says they did it to try to frame him after a minor dispute between neighbors that started last summer escalated into violence.
We tried to talk to the man about his dogs getting in my garbage, and he wasn't there. But when we went back, he showed up, and then when he learned that I had been on his property, he pulled a gun on me and tried to stuff me in the back of his car.
On July 7th, a month before the Minnesota mosque bombing, the state's attorney in Ford County, Illinois, charged Harry with battery and felony unlawful restraint. According to the complaint in that case, Harry pushed O'Neill face down into the trunk and held an airsoft pellet gun to his head. But O'Neill says it was far more serious than police and prosecutors allege. Harry's weapon was no toy.
I didn't see the gun, but I felt it, and it was steel, and it was cold, and I got two circles on my back from the barrel.
O'Neill lives with his wife, Hope, and their three school-aged daughters. Hope O'Neill says Harry terrorized them for months after the assault, angry that they'd called police.
He's threatened us and told us if we didn't drop the charges, then something bad was going to happen, and we will regret it at the end. So, it always played in our heads, will he really do something? That day we came home from seeing Jumanji, I guess we didn't expect to, have bombs in our yard and not get into our home until, 1 o'clock in the morning.
The O'Neills say they're fortunate it was raining that day. Otherwise, their kids, who often play in the shed with neighborhood friends, might have found the bombs before the FBI did. A week later, federal investigators returned to Clarence and canvassed the town for information about the explosives. Court documents say a search of a home belonging to Michael McWhorter's brother turned up a cache of guns, including three semi-automatic rifles illegally modified to full auto. McWhorter's family declined to comment. With the feds closing in, Harry donned a ski mask and set up his video camera. Styling himself as a leader of a group he calls the White Rabbit Militia, Harry took to YouTube and asked for help from others who share his disdain for federal law enforcement.
We're sending out an appeal to all the militia brothers out there. Please come and support us in Clarence, Illinois. We need people to stand with us and win back our liberty. Because
three other masked men can be seen in the video, too, but they don't appear together. With only one balaclava between them, they take turns in front of the camera making similar appeals. Each moves out of the frame to hand the mask to the next man.
He is an intelligent person. not much on common sense, apparently.
That's Mark Dorn, the local sheriff. He says Harry is well known in rural Ford County and has lived in the area most of his life. However, Harry spent several years in central Texas when he was in his 20s. In March of 1993, just before his second daughter was born, Harry wrote a letter to the editor of the Waco Tribune, criticizing the federal response to the siege at the Branch Davidian compound. In the days to follow, Harry would travel the 90 miles from his home in Lampasas to protest at Waco in person. After getting a bachelor's degree in psychology from what was then the University of Central Texas, Harry returned to Illinois with his wife and two young daughters. He even worked as a Ford County Sheriff's deputy for a few years, but Dorn says Harry was forced to resign in 1997 for odd behavior. That included handcuffing a woman whom he'd stopped to help after her vehicle broke down. Harry would soon affiliate himself with the Old German Baptist Brethren, a religious group whose members dress plainly. They also reject some trappings of modern life, though they're not as strict as the Amish. Dorn says Harry could often be seen wearing Amish-style clothes and riding around in a horse-drawn buggy. But some of his political views seem to be out of sync with the Brethren, who preach non-resistance even in the face of perceived injustice.
He was what I would call a sovereign citizen, as far as he had a different way of looking at how government was supposed to work, how government was supposed to react to the citizens. Like a lot of sovereign citizens, they want to pick and choose which part of the Constitution they want to follow that day so that it suits their needs and it's not following what the Constitution is meant to be.
Earlier this year, Harry sued the U.S. Department of Agriculture, alleging its voluntary produce inspection program unconstitutionally competes with a food safety auditing business he owns. Harry continues to pursue the lawsuit, even from behind bars. Recently, he mailed a handwritten motion from the Kankakee County Jail. NPR News tried to reach him there, but he did not respond to a request for comment. Harry also tried to do business with the federal government. Last year, he made a long-shot bid to construct President Trump's border wall, claiming he could build it for billions less than a Department of Homeland Security estimate. The Chicago Tribune wrote a story about Harry's endeavor. A computer rendering in his promotional video shows a grandiose design that looks like a mashup of the Great Wall of China and a Lego castle.
The wall will be culturally significant, a powerful architectural statement of the determination of the American people to defend their nation and its Anglo-Saxon heritage, Western culture, and English language.
Even as he was alternately suing and wooing federal officials, Harry came to their attention in a way he certainly did not intend. 2 months before federal investigators discovered the explosives in John O'Neill's backyard shed, someone sent Sheriff Dorn pictures of guns and bomb-making materials allegedly belonging to Harry. Dorn passed the photos on to the FBI. The anonymous photographer soon became a paid informant for the Bureau. This scrutiny from law enforcement and the media is nothing new for Michael Harry. In fact, he was in the public eye long before he was charged with bombing a mosque in Bloomington, Minnesota. 13 years ago, he was the defendant in another felony case. This one involved Central American Mennonites, international child abduction, a private eye, and a popular daytime talk show.
After being taken by their father and hidden in a religious commune for a year, Dr. Phil reunited the trio.
How would you feel about living with your mother?
It would be unhealthy.
In 2005, Harry and his ex-wife, Michelle Frakes, had been in a protracted custody dispute over their daughters, who were by then teenagers. According to court documents, Harry hadn't been taking them to school, so Frakes filed an emergency petition for custody. A day later, Harry took the girls and fled. The teens were listed with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That caught the attention of producers at the Dr. Phil Show, who offered to help. The show hired private investigator Harold Kopas to track them down. Frakes declined to speak with NPR News, but Kopas, a retired FBI agent from Atlanta, says he started his search at a Hutterite religious community in southern Minnesota. A man who lived there at the time gave Kopas a valuable tip.
Turns out that they had left Minnesota, made their way through Mexico, and then entered Belize. And they were in a community in the middle of the jungle way down south in Belize.
When Copas arrived there, he found a community of immaculate homes. The Mennonite people who live in them, he says, abide by a deep religious faith and an agrarian work ethic. Copas also found Michael Harry along with his daughters.
It was a shock to me to contrast between the way I saw the others and you see how he was living with the girls.
Copas says Harry had been in the community for the better part of a year, but had done nothing to improve the home he was given. It was dirty, and there were holes in the walls.
It was almost as if he was just living there expecting someone to take care of him, and that wasn't going to happen. Those are hardworking people. He was not a hard worker. They would let anybody come in. They're very generous, but he wasn't pulling his weight.
Copas convinced Harry to return to Illinois, where prosecutors had filed child abduction charges. Television viewers learned of Harry's odyssey in a series broadcast over 3 days on the Dr. Phil Show in May of 2006. The following October, jurors convicted Harry of child abduction, but he avoided jail. A judge sentenced him to 2.5 years of probation. Today, Harry and his alleged accomplices in the Minnesota mosque bombing are being held in federal custody without bond in Illinois. It's not clear if a grand jury here in Minnesota is considering additional charges against the men, but late last month, they were granted Minneapolis-based federal public defenders. As the case moves forward, many Muslims in the Twin Cities hope to get answers to questions they've been asking since August 5th. Why did three men allegedly drive 526 miles to attack one particular mosque in Bloomington, Minnesota? And how did they become radicalized? Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.